But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. Then, if that's how you say that, then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and give to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God.
Today we have this famous, in the King James Version, Jesus says, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and to God which is God's." We have the ultimate gotcha question, which in our day, we are so used to the posturing, the wrestling, the obscuring of the truth that maybe this doesn't surprise us on one level. But it's quite an interesting, fun story we have today as Jesus is confronted and a trap is laid, and he deftly avoids it. We're not so surprised by this today because we're obsessed with the separation between church and state, and we're in this time on so many levels of legalism and the politicking. And so in some ways, we picture the press briefing room at the White House, and this kind of questioning is not odd in the least. But what's amazing, unlike the best media training anyone could get today, Jesus not only deftly avoids the trap, but takes it to the whole next level. And today our question is focused on what is God's and what comes from God. Friends, I've been thinking all week about a story that really got me convicted this summer after Rita brought our book Possibility my way. We began looking at Reverend Barber's The Third Reconstruction as a possible study for this fall, and one of the moments in my preview of the book this summer, I just got convicted seeing how he made a pledge one long night, a dark evening in a hospital, and I want to share with you just a little clip. This will jingle familiar to some of you who are reading along the book. Reverend Barber was in the awful situation where his daughter, he and his wife had traveled to Johns Hopkins to bring their young daughter to receive brain surgery. And she had been diagnosed with serious hydrocephalus, and they were doing everything they could to reduce the swelling in her brain immediately. And as they were rushing in for the last appointment before her surgery, he noticed another little boy lying alone on a gurney in the hallway, and something inside of him just grabbed him. He said, "So you're not concerned for this child too?" Even in the midst of his worst moment with his daughter, something stopped him in his tracks. He walked over and he prayed for that boy before he went into surgery. And later that night, as he and his wife were in the chapel and they were praying about their daughter's surgery, he felt he had a small sense of what God might feel watching a world where some of God's children suffer and die from poverty and hunger, and others play video games, knowing they will always have more than enough. And something had shifted in him, and that night, that very moment, he promised God that he would dedicate his life to fighting for God's vulnerable children. And we learn in the book that you know, 15 years later, his daughter, a brilliant young woman, thriving. She's had good health care. She's had a good education. She's had a family and community that loved her. But as he felt moved to pray for this boy at Johns Hopkins, something much bigger moved in him as well. And he writes about being convicted to stand up for God's children who weren't thriving because of all those systemic forces that weigh down. I was thinking about this story so much this week because, in essence, as we take a look at this dance with the coin and the trickery of Jesus, in some ways it's all pointing to the images on these coins. And are these images of emperors or images of God? And it brings our thoughts to the image of God that is implanted on each and every one of us as we are children of God. So to have a little fun with the passage, Jesus is confronted, and either way he goes, he's gonna be trapped. And because on one hand, if he says, he pays tribute to, this is the Emperor Tiberius Caesar, if he says, give your money to Caesar, he'll be offending the devout Jewish folks who are so clear that they should not worship graven images. They shouldn't even be carrying coins with the images of emperors on them. And so what does he do? Very, very interesting. He says, well, show me your coin. And so whoever throws him, a lot of people, it seems, were ready to throw him a coin to trick him. And he actually exposes most of the crowd because everyone who's carrying a coin, imagine this today, suddenly the assessment, the perception of everyone else in the crowd who's devout, who's not carrying coins with images on them, sees that all these folks are exposed. Are these neighbors posers? Are they trying to trick Jesus about how pious he is? And here they are carrying graven images. So he's very tricky in that. But what is so interesting is that if Jesus goes the other way and says, absolutely, you know, it's all God, resist the emperor, resist paying to Caesar. And our sidebar is that this was mostly farming at this time. 90% of what folks were doing was farming, and about, you know, just probably two-thirds of the harvest shipped off to Rome. The taxes, 21% of what they have, but trying to subsist on a third of the harvest and the produce, that's what people are looking at. The anger is not far from the surface, that they are toiling and sending it off to the coffers in Rome. And so you'd think there would be a sympathetic audience for Jesus to say, focus on God and not Caesar. But if he did that, imagine how the authorities would come around and he would be charged with sedition immediately. So he is avoiding both of these traps and presenting the question, in a sense, bumping it up a notch. What is God's? And for us, that is what we get to ponder today in this time where we don't need to spend much time thinking about emperors and the domination of the rulers who are acting as if not only kings and gods, but imagine, let's just say we kind of got that. We've been thinking a lot about that. So perhaps today our hearts travel more to, what would this mean if all of this posturing and all of this legalism and all of this great divide and this right and wrong, what if we could live in such a way that we knew that if we were together in this, we could bump this up to a much higher plane? What if all people lived from a sense that we are all of God, that everything is of God? So we have this invitation, and I have been so curious about how this aligns with what we are invited into each and every moment of every day, and that is to be present. It's almost a gotcha moment for us every step we take. Are we going to be pulled into those regrets of our past? Are we going to be pulled into focusing on what has already happened and stay pulled down by that? Or does this draw us to make peace with the past? Because Lord knows there's enough of us being pulled into an incessant obsession with the future and planning for our future. And we're so far down the road, we may be missing some of this day's beauty and some of that sense of God in the moment. What if we step back from our futuring? And what if, as Thich Nhat Hanh boils it down to three words, be here now. What if we avoid these traps and the trickery of all that pulls us back into our past and all that is pulling us into the worries of our future? What if this kind of changing the angle, bumping up the question, what if we have a chance today to savor the precious present and see what happens, see how much more of God's realm that we encounter? I'm gonna say every coffee hour at Keystone, I see so much of this going on. I see how so many of you are really taking time to ask each other how you are today, and the kind of care and concern and love that is present in our mix. I see a sense of being in the present, and I want to invite you today, experiment, take your coffee hour, and just push aside those worries about what's coming the rest of today, the rest of the week. Push aside all that has been dragging you down about what has already passed that you really can't change now. And be drawn in to this experiment. Have a coffee hour where you just play with being present and taking a look in the eyes of the person you're chatting with. Is there an image of God in this beloved child of God before you? Is there some sense of that great vastness that connects us all, that beauty? Maybe, just maybe, being in the precious present moment, we will begin step by step to embody that hope that really all is from God, and that we are made in the image of God. And so we, as children of God, have this chance to cherish the present moment and to wake up to that fullness of God, seeing the image in each other, and slowly bringing all of us, all in this world of posturing and wrestling, to a much higher plane.